chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flare, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope. Yo, man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones, bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Really happy to be back with you. We've got a great show in store for you tonight. All kinds of info. We've got the New Hampshire primary just going off, and we're going to get into that first, and then we got some updates from some guests, some team members. I mean, you name it, we got a bunch of stuff going on, all kinds of news, all kinds of crazy stuff, too, going on in Michigan, Flint. We're going to cover it all tonight, so thank you all for being here, and we're going to get started. So let me introduce my panel. Before we jump into this stuff, I'm joined by my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Not a lot, Nick. Not a lot, man. Just watching the unfolding circus. That's all, like always.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's we're in a unique position here to be kind of some of the few people that have kind of broken through the propaganda stuff and get to see the emperor having no clothes, and it kind of sucks at times. You know that old saying, "Ignorance is bliss." I guess you know in some ways it's true. I feel kind of bad for the true believer Bernie Sanders supporters out there today after the news out of New Hampshire. We're going to get into that. First, let me finish introducing our panel. We also have our special guest co-host Jake Anderson. What's up, man?
Not much. As well as DB, I'm just kind of bought my ticket to the circus and been watching. The mainstream media and how they create the narrative behind this election, and watching Howard Dean support Clinton, and all kinds of juicy stuff going on in the mainstream media, Nick. It's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine watching CNN and MSNBC.
It's entertainment, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's top-rate entertainment. Rachel Maddow is just killing it. Just her schmarmy wit is just slaying it, you know? No, I don't know. I don't understand. She has this thing against Chris Christie. She went off on Chris Christie for a while today.
Yeah, he's like out of the race now. I'm kind of happy that Christie dealt that damage to Rubio. That was pretty entertaining. I think we talked about this a little bit on the last show, but in the last Republican debate, Marco Rubio suffered some major damage, and we're seeing that. We saw that play out in New Hampshire there, where he finished he finished behind Jeb Bush, for crying out loud, and he was like the guy that was supposedly going in with the most momentum in the New Hampshire,
behind Vermin Supreme even.
Yeah, Vermin Supreme got fourth, but
I think in the Democratic primary there was only four candidates, so that's not saying exactly a huge amount. But you know, the funny thing was Rubio sinking like the Titanic. I mean, he really did look like the guy that was going to be pushed forward to be the nominee. I don't know how it's going to play out now after what went down in that debate. But as much as I can't stand Chris Christie, I mean, I gotta give him the. I gotta give him props where it's deserving, and Chris Christie hobbled Marco Rubio. That was a positive thing. I think Rubio is probably the most dangerous Republican candidate out there, so I'm glad to see him at least get a stumble in his campaign. We're gonna have to see how it plays out. They may choose a new horse. John Kasich may be the next guy. I don't know. Maybe Claire can tell us a little bit about him. I think you're living under his regime, aren't you, out there in Ohio?
Yes, I am. Yeah, Kasich would not. That would not be a good thing. That would not be a good thing at all. I mean, I know that he's kind of come out sounding like, in some ways, the more rational guy, but don't be fooled.
That's the irony, is that suddenly Jeb Bush and John Kasich seem like, you know, rational, good politicians. You know, you find yourself being like, there's actually a modicum of sanity here, but no, it's just. You compare them to Cruz and Trump, and that's the triangulation that's happening here, is that we're going to see. It's going to be Trump, Cruz, and then basically Rubio, Kasich, and Bush are now competing for the establishment vertices of that triangle, and that's what the race is going to be. It's going to be a three-way race, and it's going to go for a while. It's going to be crazy on both sides, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and as you mentioned, I think by design, I definitely think that I initially thought Jeb Bush was going to be the candidate to make Rubio look sane, but I'd never suspected it to be Bush coming out on the end looking like the guy that's like relatively moderate and like not a warmongering crazy lunatic. But that's the way it's come. You know, that's just the way the cookie crumbles, I guess.
It's like the election has become a big parody. I mean, this is really sad that we are saying these people are more rational than these other people when none of them are rational, reasonable human beings at all.
Oh, I think you're right. I mean, but I think this is why they have a guy like Trump. They even allow him to run is to make everyone else look not that bad, you know, and so we get these guys that are really neoconservative, warmongering types, and they look kind of normal compared to Trump, you know what I mean, and Cruz. And so that's all part of the game. So you got Trump winning New Hampshire, which is kind of not a big surprise there because he was leading all the polls and stuff. But I guess it is kind of surprising that a guy like Trump could win a whole state. But I think the bigger news coming out of New Hampshire, for one, Rubio has been kind of buried. I doubt he's going to be able to make any kind of comeback by the time South Carolina comes around, which is the next voting state. I think Cruz will probably do well there. I'm not sure who else is going to pull through. Trump may win it in South Carolina as well. But on the Democratic side, we got this kind of weird scenario playing out over there. As most people listening probably know, Bernie Sanders won it in somewhat of a landslide. I think, in fact, he won it by the largest margin ever. He was the most victorious candidate to ever run in the Democratic New Hampshire primary. He won by 20% over top of Hillary Clinton. But this is where the story takes a little bit of a darker turn. It turns out that Hillary Clinton is either tying with Bernie Sanders or actually winning, beating Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire when it comes to the delegate count. Claire, you wrote an article about this today on the Anti-Media. What can you tell us about this?
Well, an issue here is that the regular delegates for the Democratic Party are they're decided by the popular vote. So the regular delegates will be awarded according to the percentage of the vote, and that's fine and good. And a slight majority went to Bernie for that. But the problem is superdelegates are not obligated to vote according to how the populace votes. So superdelegates can basically vote for whomever they choose, and they can really swing an election in whichever direction they want to. And by all accounts, from all the reports that I was reading before I wrote this, that the superdelegates are going to Hillary. So she has basically taken New Hampshire from Bernie, in a sense, because of these superdelegates who are pledged for the end game to her instead of him. So I mean, that's just the way the cookie crumbles, and that's another example of why the vote really isn't anything much to do with the people.
As if our representative democracy wasn't, you know, derailed enough, we have these freaking superdelegates on the Dem. I mean, why does the Democratic Party do it and not the Republicans? I don't get that.
Well, I think
that I'm not sure, but
the Republicans have their own set of weird rules when it comes to the national convention. The same kind of thing can be pulled out if Trump really does become wins the popular vote throughout most of these states. At the national convention, there's what's called a brokered convention. It hasn't happened in a couple decades, I believe, but it's something that's there on the books, and they could actually yank the rug out from under Trump as well, and then they could put someone else in his place, like a Jeb Bush, a Kasich, a Rubio, whatever, you know, one of these guys they can put in his place that is the establishment pick. And so that's going to be really interesting. I was doing a little bit of research on these superdelegates. And what I found out was that apparently it was something like back in 1968, apparently it was even worse back then. And there was like a riot at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. I haven't done all the research yet, but apparently after that is when the Democratic Party switched over to be a little bit more actually democratic, where it was less about the party power figures choosing the candidate and more about them allowing a popular vote. And apparently that's where the primary system came from. And then later on in the 80s, they decided after after Jimmy Carter, the party decided, look, we can't allow this to happen anymore. I don't know what it – I still don't understand why people hate Jimmy Carter so much. He's like the only president to never start a war. Maybe that's what it is. But apparently after Jimmy Carter, they're like, well, we can't allow these populist, you know, candidates win anymore. We got to allow at least we got to give the political establishment a major say in who's elected. And this is when they created the superdelegates. It was done back in the 80s following Jimmy Carter. And essentially, the superdelegates were actually created to prevent a populist candidate like Bernie Sanders from winning. It literally, this is why it was done. So I'm going to do some more research on that, and we may be covering this in the next coming days regarding the superdelegates. It is a complicated process. The electoral system is not what most people think it is. It's not a populist, you know, a popular vote. It's not very democratic when we really come down to it. It's very different than what people perceive, and so we're gonna look a little bit more into that on the anti-media. But yeah, people are pretty up in arms about what went on in New Hampshire, and I guess rightly so. A bunch of people are out there, you know, like I said, true believers, Bernie Sanders supporters, that are actually out there, like, you know, hitting the pavement and doing all the groundwork and trying to get out the vote and all that stuff, only to have this stuff thrown in their face, and Hillary Clinton walks out with the delegates. I mean, I can only imagine the feeling that Bernie Sanders supporters have. I'm not a Bernie Sanders supporter myself, so I don't know. But I could imagine that it's pretty disheartening, or maybe angering. Maybe this is what actually sparks to lead into people in a better direction rather than supporting the Democratic Party and that kind of thing. I don't know. I guess we're going to have to wait and see. And this story is still developing, so we're going to be covering this in the next coming shows. Make sure you tune in to our next shows Monday through Friday here on the Anti-Media.
Did you ever think that the internet pulled back the curtain on the wizard? You know what I mean? This is what's going on right now. People are realizing things. Anybody that has been hip to the game has known for a long, long time. And now finally the masses are waking up because they're realizing their vote and their voice means nothing to the people in charge. And it has to be taken back. They're not going to give it back. That's what people don't understand. And maybe we can do it peacefully, maybe not. But they're not just going to make changes because we want them.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to... No matter how hard you vote, I don't think it's going to really get the people that are pulling the levers of power to really change their minds. I mean, they got their financiers, they got their special interests, they got the people taking care of them. But they just got to sell this show to us once every 4 years, once every 2 years. They got to sell it to us. We got to buy into this illusion of democracy so that it does. You know, this illusion of democracy is a very dangerous thing. It really does kill out any kind of real, you know, pressure, any kind of real activist spirit, any kind of real revolutionary spirit. It's like a vacuum that gets sucked up by the elections that happen every couple of years, you know, and so that's a very dangerous thing. We're about to go on to the next story here, but anyone else got any comments before we move on? We're going to come to this election stuff. We're going to talk to Carrie first. out near this huge methane leak in Southern California, because she's got some direct information to talk about. But we're going to come back to this election stuff in a few minutes. So first I want to go over to Carrie Wedler, one of our awesome journalists at the Anti-Media and our editor as well. What's up, Carrie? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Oh, really well, really well. We're getting through this election stuff, and we're going to come back to it. It's a total mess, and I know you've been through the process a couple times with some of these candidates and in the past and all that stuff, as well as most of us also on the panel. And I'm sure everyone listening tonight has probably had their moments as well. But in the end, you know, things are still going to happen. And what's going on right now in Porter Ranch is one of these things that it doesn't matter if there's a Republican or a Democrat in charge or whatever. Things like this are still going to happen, and it's still going to be a fumbling mess, which is what's been happening over there with this methane leak. He said, she said, everyone's pointing fingers. Nobody knows what's really going on. But that's why we're bringing you on tonight. We want to get a little bit more of a realistic picture of what's happening out there.
Okay. Well, let's start with, I was in Porter Ranch today, and I will get to that in a minute, but I've been working on a story this week because it sort of flew under the radar last week. I didn't even see it, but apparently the L.A. County District Attorney's Office filed criminal charges against SoCal Gas. That sounds really great, right? Like, wait, what? They're punishing them for doing something? Yeah, it sounds really good. And not for doing something, but for causing a leak. It sounds really great until you find out that it's for misdemeanor charges. So SoCal Gas has poisoned thousands of people and forced evacuations. They've let out carcinogens into the atmosphere, and all the DA can manage is for misdemeanor charges. And to me, that's just kind of shocking. And, you know, it's like, even in the same age, it's shocking. It's like, really? Like, you're not even going to try to make it seem like you think they're criminals? And, I guess the fines, they're trying to get fines out of them, and this is different from the civil suits that have been filed, so there are multiple civil suits. This is the first criminal suit, and one of the misdemeanors is for not notifying the state's emergency services at the time of the leak, and they're seeking to fine them $25,000 per day that they didn't report the leak, and then they want $1,000 per day that it's gone on. But if you do the math on that, that's still under $1 million, and that just doesn't really seem like enough to me. And some other estimates about separate claims are saying that it's going to cost over $1 billion for SoCal Gas. I'm like, okay, that's more like it. But my solution wasn't even necessarily to have SoCal Gas be paying the Justice Department or the legal system money. It's to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And unfortunately, I think, well, I don't know. I've been sort of brushed it off by the DA's office. They keep coming up with excuses for not having an answer for me as to why they weren't charged with felonies. So I'm giving them one more day. If I don't hear from them by the morning, I'll just publish the story without the comment. But I'm expecting them to either ignore me, say that they thought the charges should be a misdemeanor, or say that the way the laws are written requires it to be a misdemeanor. And I'm sort of expecting the third. And to me, that's just so indicative of what we're dealing with and how serious and systemic the problem is. Because, and this is all speculation, I don't know, because they're not answering me and they keep coming up with little excuses as to why they haven't contacted me yet. But I'm assuming that there's something about the legal infrastructure that's making it so this is their limit. We'll know more tomorrow. We'll publish the story tomorrow so you guys can read on at theantimedia.org. But that's sort of the legal thing going on right now. And then in other aspects, I was actually in Porter Ranch today. I am sick. I can't even tell you. Like, I was filming there for a few hours because I felt, okay, I need to be authentic. I need to go to Porter Ranch and film. And I'm like, my chest feels like it's just filled with crap and it's constricted, and I've been coughing and I have a sore throat and I'm sick to my stomach and I have a headache. And I mean, I was standing outside the Aliso Canyon facility, so I was like right there. And so, of course, I'm sick, but the smell of gas in the air is still really strong, and they're saying that they plugged it up, and that's possible, but clearly not enough, because I'm sick, people are sick. A man came up to me while I was filming today. He told me that his whole family's sick. The air filters they have aren't doing anything. And so, I mean, I don't want to be demoralized, because I think there's so many positive things going on in the country right now, and people are waking up, and people are aware. You guys were just talking about how Bernie Sanders getting robbed in New Hampshire could be a spark that gets people motivated. So I don't want to be depressing, but at the same time, it's it's just really, really crazy to see how little accountability there is. I'm going to stop talking so you can say something. Because I've been going so
long. Well, I mean, it is kind of crazy when these news stories affect you personally, right? And yeah, I mean, this lawsuit that came out, it's kind of like, oh, yay, there's finally some responsibility. And then it's like, oh, wait, they're just charging these guys with misdemeanors? They're poisoning thousands and thousands of people currently. It's like, wow, this
currently,
is
crazy. Yeah.
It's like misdemeanors, huh? I know if I were out there dumping something down the drain in front of the place where I live and it turned out to be poisoning somebody, I would probably be in jail tomorrow. You know,
you can't even do a car wash in your driveway anymore in California.
Yeah, I mean,
what a bunch of bullshit.
Fine for washing my car in the daytime. You know what I mean? That's how bad it is right now. But these guys are dumping out who knows how many tons per day of poisonous methane gas with carcinogens. There's even been some reports of the possibility of
hydrogen,
like
sulfide.
Almost like, what is it, like radioactive type stuff coming out. And it's like,
why don't they just dump a bunch of those black plastic balls all over it?
Yeah, maybe they'll absorb some of this gas. It's not a very good sign when you know they're pulling out these misdemeanor charges. Very symbolic though of what, you know, how corporations are kind of typically dealt with in the United States. Unless you're, you know, Bernie Madoff and you rob a bunch of rich people, then you actually get caught. I mean, it's kind of like this HSBC money laundering for the cartels, and they get slapped on the wrist. All these bankers help crash the economy. Mm-hmm. They get slapped on the wrist, you know, and it's just like, oh my God, it's like, when are we going to see some accountability? You know, and that's one of the reasons why I think people, you know, wanted to elect a guy like Barack Obama. It's like, oh, he's going to, you know, he's actually going to do what he says. He's going to rein in the corporations and stuff like that. Well, sorry, but no, that's just not happening.
Well, and it's like even the politicians that are acting like they're concerned right now. I mean, Dianne Feinstein has been pushing for accountability for SoCalGas, and that sounds really great and lovely until you look at her campaign donors and you see that she gets money from PG&E, which is Pacific Gas and Electric, which is another monopoly in California, but I think they're more prominent in Northern California, and they're responsible for a bunch of different disasters. So it's not like she cares about well-being. It's, well, it's not PG&E, so now I have a political opportunity to make my constituents think that I care. I mean, she couldn't care less. I think PG&E was responsible for that massive gas line explosion up in Northern California. I think it was like 2009. I think it was San Bruno. But it's just so frustrating to watch these politicians just sort of like flying their way into Porter Ranch and then act like they're really concerned with how people are doing and their well-being. And I'm sure there are a couple of council people who really are concerned. I don't want to blanket statement everyone who's in government, but the people who are in government, assuming there are some who are trying to help, are for sure being stymied by just the momentum and the gravitas of the way the system is structured. And it was funny because I actually ran into a cop today, and I was filming in Porter Ranch, and he pulled up, and I was like, oh, gosh, somebody I can't film. You know, I was just, like, ready for a fight. And he came up, and apparently there was, like, a rapist on the loose or something, I don't know. And he came up, and he was like, please film it. You know, he said that his brother's sick, and he said that his family's, like, asking him to do something because he's a cop. And he's like, what am I going to do, arrest the executives of SoCalGas? Like, no, he can't do that. He's just a cop. He's, like, the bottom rung of government. And he also told me that the guys at SoCalGas are assholes. That's what he told me because he's been up in that area. But I can't confirm that, although I was at a hearing, and they did very much seem to be unpleasant and very sinister. But it's just so crazy. And, you know, I'll be real. Like, I'm from the Valley. I'm a Valley girl. I've lived a very privileged life. Like, I'm lucky. I've seen things. I've had my own hardships. We all have our struggles. But I've been very lucky to grow up where I did, you know, never mind the fact that there's, like, a massive radioactive leak 8 miles away and then another radioactive leak 2 miles away. Like, aside from that, you know, I've been pretty sheltered. And so to see this happen in my hometown, even though I've been speaking out again about Flint and about all these other disasters in other areas, like, to see it in your hometown it's just a very odd experience. And, you know, on one hand, it's been covered a lot, and on others, it fades out of the public consciousness. You know, the media stops covering it, people stop thinking about it. And I talk to people in LA, and they're like, there's a gas leak? What? Like, they haven't even heard of it. People in Los Angeles don't know. So I'm just trying to get a little bit of awareness, a little bit more awareness out about it, because these things are happening all over the country. It's not just Porter Ranch.
Yeah, and you know, this thing, the Porter Ranch thing was for the, up until it cracked wide open, and I we have to take partial credit here at the Anti-Media Front to turn this into a national narrative here. This was a story that was really only slightly covered in local news and was really just kind of not talked about at all on a national scale. When this is a huge story. I mean, this is no small time leak. I think it was Aaron Brockovich compared it to the BP thing. It's a whole different type of disaster. But I mean, this is something that really is not getting the attention that it deserves, and it's the attention that is actually will actually finally drive these people that are, you know, the bureaucracies that are supposed to deal with cleaning this up, that are supposed to be watching out for people. It's this pressure that's actually going to finally get them to move, you know, because without anyone saying anything, who knows how long it would have gone on without anyone being notified.
Exactly. Like, how long was SoCal Gas going to wait to even report it? You know, they were telling residents they were crazy for reporting that they were sick. And I mean, it's like, my parents are in Granada Hills and they're sickened by it. But to actually be at the facility, I mean, I really feel for the people in Porter Ranch, because I'm not doing well right now. Like, I'll be okay tomorrow, you know, once it clears my system. But to be exposed to this long term, it's like, how can SoCal Gas with a straight face tell people that they're imagining it? That's essentially what they were saying a few months ago before it turned into a much bigger story. And they've lied at every turn. They've kept data from the public. They've lied about emissions. They've downplayed this at every turn. And so we don't even know how bad it could be. Like, it could be even worse, and they're just not reporting it. And on top of that, like, there's the DOJ, the California Department of Justice, I believe, filed a civil suit against them, and they had a press release. And if you scroll to the bottom of the press release, I'll link it in the article we put out tomorrow, but if you scroll to the bottom, it has a list of all of the agencies and bureaucracies involved. And it's like, no wonder they can't get anything done. There's like 15 or 20 agencies that are allegedly working on it, yet no one has come up with a solution. I don't understand how that's possible, but it's possible because it's so convoluted, and there's so much authority spread out across so many different bureaucracies that it seems no one has authority. But in the meantime, SoCal Gas has the monopoly and they own the governor. So, yeah, of course, we are where we are.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems with all these bureaucracies, is that it's like, you know, they're all going to point fingers at each other, and it goes into a circle.
Exactly.
And in the end, it's like pretty much no one's going to be held accountable for the most part.
Another thing to think about, too, is California's fairly old state, you know, 1850, and there's been a lot of people living there for a long time. I know the San Bruno thing was that they had wooden pipes. And, of course, wood is flammable, so why would you – you know, they didn't know any better back then. That's how old this stuff is.
Right.
So at some point, California is going to reach, and maybe it already has, its carrying capacity and what it can deliver and how many people it can service. And, you know, that's just something to think about. Ecological disaster after ecological disaster, both in places where the economy's gutted, like Michigan, and then places where there's just so many people living there, like California and New York.
Well, California's broke, too.
What did?
I was just saying California is also broke. You know,
it shouldn't
it
be.
Amazing.
You know, the Fed takes more than the taxes that we give them. So, you know, that's where California is broke.
Right.
Jake, go ahead, man.
Oh, I was just going to make a stupid joke about there's plenty of space to live in the Redwoods. It really wasn't worth worth the time. We can live in the trees, DB. There's plenty of space in California. Come back to California, man.
That was a Planet of the Apes thing, right?
Come breathe in the gas and the carcinogens with us.
Yeah, the benzene. Get your radiation on.
Gosh. Yeah, if the gas doesn't kill you, the earthquakes will.
Exactly.
We got methane for everybody.
In another outdated well.
Hey, we might have methane poisoning, earthquakes, and a very high possibility of tsunamis, but hey, we got good weather.
Hey, and we have terrorist cells out here, so we got it all.
So anyone listening tonight, if you're in the L.A. or Los Angeles area, Southern California, make sure you know about what's going on with Porter Ranch. You can search it up on the Anti-Media, or you can just Google it if you want other sources and stuff. We're going to be covering this as developments come through. As Carrie mentioned, we're going to be posting a story about it tomorrow. We're waiting on a statement from the city. We're not sure if they're going to get back to us. Either way, we're going to be posting it tomorrow. Keep an eye out for that. Carrie, before we let you go, you did another story today regarding the Flint water crisis. And that has become, you know, that has very much become a national narrative. Hillary Clinton went out there to go try to gain a bunch of votes.
Naturally.
Somehow, I mean, I don't know what she was thinking, but I heard a bunch of residents were like, dude, we don't even want her here. I don't blame them. But so Flint is poisoning a bunch of people with the lead. Apparently, it's the water wasn't treated with phosphates, and that led to corrosion of the pipes. The pipes are really old. They're made with lead, and that ended up getting lead in the water supply. Now, Flint is not alone. There's a bunch of other cities throughout the U.S., throughout Michigan, with these old pipes, and are having these very similar issues. In fact, there's you covered it. Carrie, you actually covered this. There's plenty of other cities in Michigan alone that have higher levels of lead than Flint does.
Mm-hmm.
But the story today was about some other victims of this lead poisoning that aren't really being talked about much, and that's the people's pets that are being poisoned now by this lead in water.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far there's only two confirmed cases. One was a stray, one was a pet. But they're constantly doing testing, and the requests for tests have increased because people are obviously concerned about their pets. And also the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, they're not giving out too many details, and I'm not going to speculate as to their motivation. They're saying it's privacy law. Who knows? But the fact that two dogs have been poisoned means that it's capable for a dog to get lead poisoning, and that's just so sad to me. And, you know, we were talking about, Nick, like, people care more about animals than humans, and sometimes that's really true. And, you know, in this case, it's especially sad because it's human action. It's not only screwing over all these other people and, you know, hurting humanity, but it's also hurting these animals. And what do these animals do? They did nothing. You know, they're just obeying their instincts. You know, they're not sinister. They're not poisoning people. They're not trying to shaft people and save money. Like, they're just trying to drink some water. And they're sick from it. And that's just so especially sad to me. And there are a lot of pets in Porter Ranch that Claire reported on. They're sick, too. It's just... We're so concerned about how humans are suffering, as we should be, but it's just an extra layer of, like, sadness and tragedy that we're also watching animals who are just little sentient beings who are trying to, like, make their way on the planet as they have for thousands of years, billions of years maybe, you know, we're hurting them too. And so that's just especially sad to me.
Yeah, and then, you know, the other animals, the wildlife out there in Michigan and also here in Southern California that are being exposed to this methane, the birds, I mean, the... I'm not familiar with the geography of Porter Ranch, but I'm assuming there's like probably deer and all kinds of wildlife out there that are being negatively impacted by what's going on. And so, you know, this is just another example of humans being irresponsible with our environment.
Look at the
Go ahead. I was just going to say really quickly, we covered that nuclear disaster story that happened like no more than 10 miles away from Porter Ranch, right near where I grew up too. And I got an email from a guy who grew up in that region, and his mom had gotten cancer, and his friends had gotten cancer, and he remembered playing in the canyon and seeing frogs with three eyes, like seeing mutated frogs, you know? And so it's from radiation to methane to lead, I mean, it's everywhere, and we really need to be more conscious of who it's affecting and not just human-wise, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, humans have become so reckless with our environment. And now the whole climate change debate, I know there's a bunch of skeptics on that, but the fact remains is that there's a lot of pollution. We're using a lot of fossil fuels. I mean, it can't be good for the environment to be pumping all that stuff out there. You know, it's just one thing after another. It's like, how many times do we got to see these ecological disasters? I mean, the fires in Indonesia and you know, all this stuff. It's just, God, I mean, when are we going to learn? You know, and I'm glad that alternative energy is finally making like major headway, but it's not happening fast enough. You know, we're still going to be relying on fossil fuels for the next, I don't know, 50 or so years. I mean, hopefully we don't destroy the entire planet by the time we're ready to embrace sustainable energy like completely. DB, I wanted to go to DB real quick and then get some final comments from Carrie because I know you got to get going.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to interject real quick that, you know, we're seeing even the effects now for the first time in the Southern Hemisphere with the massive whale die-off in Chile. And that's what I'm saying, man. Everything that's going on is spreading and it's becoming endemic. I mean, if the oceans are killing these apex, you know, at the top of the food chain animals, or they're beaching themselves to get away from the ocean, what in the hell is going on in there?
Yeah, I mean, great point. I mean, it's not just on land. It's not just these lead contaminations or the gas leaks. I mean, the entire oceans are being thrown out of balance. And you know, I know the Earth is very, you know, it's the Earth is very strong, and it'll figure out a way to deal with what we're doing to it. But you know, the fact of the matter is, it's probably not going to bode well for us as human beings when the Earth finally does rebalance itself and take care of the problem that we're causing. You know, it's going to be in the form of some major natural disasters, most likely some major weather patterns. I mean, you name it. Things aren't going to be very good for us if we continue to abuse our position here on the Earth as the you know, the apex organism here. I mean, sooner or later, if we're not careful, we'll be replaced. Carrie, I want to go back to you for any final comments before you got to go.
Yeah, that's funny. I was actually going to say that, and I was going to credit you because I've heard you say it. You know, just talking about, like, humanity's not going to be okay. Like, the Earth will probably be okay after we die off, but humanity's in trouble. But the only other thing I wanted to say is you were talking about the use of fossil fuels, and you were talking about how we're still going to be using that for however many years. And ultimately, what it comes down to is that demand is the reason SoCalGas happened. And there are multiple reasons. You know, they didn't follow the written regulation, which was written, you know, so I'm not sure how more regulation is going to help. But, you know, there are plenty of reasons and immediate causes. But at the end of the day, it's our dependence on those things that keeps that facility in business, and it keeps them running, and it keeps them running on old infrastructure without replacing it because they're still profiting. So why should they bother? You know, so as long as we're dependent on it, and I'm talking about myself, too, all of us, we're all complicit. As long as we continue to be a part of that system, these things are going to continue to happen. And I wish I had like a more positive thing to say, but the methane has gone to my brain. So I think that's all I got right now.
Well, Carrie, thanks for joining us. Hopefully you come back soon. Keep an eye out tomorrow for the story on Porter Ranch, because it's going to be some information that we're getting out there that needs to be shown. Thanks for calling.
Get a super good air filter. From Costco.
Yeah. Well, the guy I ran into said air filters aren't even working, but, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll be plugged soon. Let's see if SoCalGas can do one thing right. That would be cool. I'll hope for that.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
So, yeah, you know, it's really sad when one of our own team members is fallen victim to this just irresponsible environmental policies. And I don't know, man, whether it's just greed, people cutting corners, just the infrastructure being outdated. I mean, probably a combination of all those things.
It's an insane greed, Nick, that these guys think they're going to get so rich that even if they make the whole world poison, they'll either go underground or they'll have a breakaway civilization go somewhere else. And maybe that's true at the very, very, very pinnacle, but these CEOs and guys we see like on the street, they're not going anywhere. They're staying right here with us.
Yeah, you know, and the workers, man, the guys that are building the pipes and the pipe fitters and the people building these pipelines, and even the cops out there that are enforcing the laws that are holding down the working class people and stuff. You know, sooner or later, these guys are going to have to wake up and smell the coffee and realize, hey, dude, you may be a cog in the wheel, but you're not joining that party when the party leaves. And
you know, the thing is, too, that's really kind of – that isn't mentioned much is that – these things happen in fits and starts, but there is a mess all over the country. I mean, even in researching the nuclear kind of crazy mess that was going on outside of St. Louis, I realized that the same Manhattan Project era nuclear waste crap that went there also went to a place very close to where I went to summer camp when I was a kid, and that place closed down like the year after I stopped going because it was contaminated with radiation. Like the groundwater and everything. I mean, this is all over the country. It's everywhere. And it's just that the more major events happen and we know about them, but it's everywhere. You know, you can't avoid it. And it's all in the name of profit and money and, like, carelessness, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and again, another thing, too, here, and this is where I turn into more of a skeptic. I, you know, when this nuclear stuff first started going on, the Manhattan Project, when they first started developing nuclear bombs and stuff like that, you know, I think that they probably were ignorant to the fact that radiation was harmful, or at least they didn't think it was that harmful. And they may not, you know, maybe they just didn't know how dangerous it was. But this is why we have to be also very careful with our science. We have to be responsible with our science and run lots and lots and lots of testing before we start going and just out in the open start detonating nuclear weapons and building, nuclear power plants on top of fault lines, which is the case up in Indian Point, which is also the case with most of the nuclear power plants here in California. We got to be much more careful with this science. I know, Claire, we covered this thing about Zika and the genetically modified mosquitoes. We don't know exactly where that's going to end up going. All the research is hopefully being done right now because there's a mad scramble to figure out what's going on with that, and we may know more about that very soon in the future. But it's just another one of those things where we got to be much more careful with stuff, especially really dangerous technologies, and know what we're doing before we start doing it, because then we're going to look back 50 years later and be like, damn, we should probably have never done that.
And stuff's hitting right in the head now. There was an explosion at North Carolina nuclear power plant a couple days ago. I think it was on February 3rd, run by Duke Energy, who are notorious for lobbying and getting regulations loosened to the point now where they regulate themselves. And guess what happened to this power plant? It actually lost power. It was in risk of meltdown if the diesel generators hadn't kicked in. And they're not necessarily going to kick in if they don't get used a lot. And I guess they hadn't been run in a long time. So it's hitting the head right now.
Yeah, all this stuff seems to be coming out. All this pollution, the Porter Ranch leak, the nuclear runoff, bunch of it here in Arizona, Utah, Colorado, where they mine the uranium on a lot of the Native American lands. As the one Claire mentioned outside of St. Louis. I mean, dude, it's just like there's environmental catastrophes all over the country and all over the world. I mean, Fukushima is still a problem. I was just seeing some news today about they're trying to build that ice wall around the Fukushima thing, and that's coming to some kind of snag. I mean, it's just like, and we just barely got done with dealing with the BP thing. We're still suffering the consequences of the BP leak.
I think Indonesia's still burning too.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, and so, I mean, human beings, I guess we're all guilty of it. Everyone out there that drives a car, uses gas, uses plastic. I mean, we're all kind of buying into this system. And yeah, it's convenient. It's great. But, you know, it comes with a major cost. And I think that's one of the things Carrie was trying to bring up there, is that it's our demand really that is driving this exploitation of nature and science for things that aren't very good. I mean, I'm all for science, and I think science should be used for the benefit of the earth and for positive things. But when we're going and using it to make nuclear bombs and fracking and this kind of crap that damages the environment, I mean, dude, we gotta start having a conscience when it comes to this earth and taking care of it. Now, while we're still on this thing with Michigan, I mean, this is just crazy. We all know the Flint crisis is going on. Now Michigan is like, they passed a bill through the Senate that basically bans anal sex. This shit is like blowing my mind. I couldn't believe it when I read the headline yesterday. I was just like, okay, this has got to be satire. It's got to be a joke, but no. And apparently, Michigan isn't the only state that is trying to do this. In fact, there's already several states that have already done this. It's also, this kind of legislation already exists in Idaho, Utah, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. No coincidence that a lot of those are in the South there. In Montana, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, the anal sex is banned, but only if you're gay. So, I mean, it's just like, wow, these politicians, they're sitting here. And like we just talked about all these environmental things going on, that we're destroying the damn earth with all these things. And these politicians, instead of like doing what they're supposed to do and taking care of the people and making sure they're okay and all that, they want to go into your bedroom and tell you how and when or where or whatever or what type of sex you could have. This is blowing my mind, man.
I'm telling you, I think we're coming down to that point where people are finally realizing how ridiculous things have gotten. I mean, this is like, these kinds of things, this ridiculousness, when people are actually being poisoned and having to pay for the water, and they're worried about what somebody is doing in the bedroom instead of holding the appropriate people responsible, people realize how bad that is. You know, that's something people can see and say, wait a minute. And I think that this is going to be very, very soon there is going to come the point where people are just going to say, look, this is, I've had enough. I really do.
Oh, man. I mean, hopefully. And you know, going back to the election stuff, I did want to revisit that and maybe go into some bigger trends here of what I'm seeing. And I want to get everyone's opinion on this. We're also taking calls, and we only have about 14 minutes left. But anyone wanting to join this conversation, feel free to call in. We can talk about anal sex or whatever you want to talk about. 718-717-8296.
We need to talk about Lockheed Martin's new butt drone. I mean,
that too. On that note, here with this crazy law, I think that article is probably from the Free Thought Project yesterday. It was probably one of the most viral articles in the world that was talking about this crazy law going on in Michigan. And Claire, as you mentioned, I think people are starting to see how, you know, crazy and how just. How this whole thing just doesn't make any sense. And I think I want to bring this back to New Hampshire and Iowa and what has been going on with Bernie Sanders, because obviously Bernie Sanders is inspiring a huge popular kind of – I wouldn't call it an uprising, but a popular Democratic push here, at least in the first two states. And now he's pulled into a dead heat with Hillary Clinton nationally, which I never thought was going to happen. He's basically pulled into a two-way tie with Clinton nationally, so he's going to be able to compete at every state, basically. But we're seeing how it's unfolding here, the shady delegate stuff going on in Iowa, which Claire, you covered, and how one of the delegates was literally unilaterally just changed. And now this development here with New Hampshire and how Bernie Sanders won in a landslide and the delegates are being pushed over to Hillary Clinton. People, I was reading the comments today, I was reading a bunch of the articles, I was reading all the people that shared the article from the anti-media, and people are completely livid. I mean, people are like, oh my God, I didn't believe the system was this rigged, but it is. Look what they're doing. I mean, I think we are coming to a point now where people, we're on the verge of a really big awakening. I don't know if this is the one that's going to cause widespread change. I know back in 2012, I participated in a small-time awakening, and that, you know, that got us on the path that I'm on now, at least here with the anti-media and all that stuff. But I think that you know, there's a chance that this whole controlled election fiasco that we're seeing going on is going to implode and it's going to backfire dramatically. I guess we're going to have to wait and see. What do you guys think of that? I want to go first over to Claire, and then we'll go around the round table.
Well, I mean, if this doesn't wake people up, I don't know what will. I mean, going back to, like, Al Gore and stuff, when the election, I mean, there was a bunch of technicalities and things, and I think people began to be stunned back then. And it's gone downhill with elections from there, and I think people realize every election since then, they realize a little bit more and a little bit more that it really is rigged. And this is the most blatant yet, I think, you know, before the actual election is happening. They see the hypocrisy and the money and who's funding who and who's paying for whose campaign. And they see, you know, delegates switching and superdelegates that, you know, don't really care what the popular vote is at all and they just do what they want. I think people are finally seeing it and that this really might make the difference. And I doubt that Bernie's going to win, and the people that are so vehemently behind Bernie, maybe if he doesn't win, they will finally realize and maybe something will really change this time, not by him being elected or not elected, but by people being pissed off.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. I think you're right. I don't know. I highly doubt that he becomes elected. The other thing I wanted to bring up about these delegates here before we go over to DB is that these superdelegates aren't just in New Hampshire. I mean, I think they have them in pretty much every state that is a primary. And unfortunately for Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton already did a bunch of that back work a long time ago, and she's already locked up almost every single superdelegate that's out there. I mean, and the superdelegates make up over 20% of the entire delegate count. So what I'm saying here is that Hillary Clinton has already locked up like 20-25% of the total delegate count for the entire Democratic primary. So, I mean, the only way for Bernie Sanders to win at this point would be to win every single state in a landslide. Other than, outside of that happening, Hillary Clinton's going to receive the nomination, and that is going to piss a lot of people off. Steve, go ahead, man.
Yeah, man, and I, you know, I'm begrudgingly a supporter just because I think he's the best candidate by far, and I don't like the alternative, and it's probably going to come to the alternative if people want to see him in office, which is a full coup. That's what it would take. It would take suspension of the whole political process. They're not going to let him in. We all know that. That doesn't mean you shouldn't vote for him or follow him or believe in his policies if you think some of them are good, and I think we need some of them. But, yeah, man, it's going to wake people up. This whole election cycle has basically awakened an entire millennial generation. I mean, at this point, the only people that are buying into any of this crap are people that watch TV, and that's like 55 and over. And unfortunately, they have money and they vote. But if people come out and vote, they can change stuff. We outnumber the older generations now for the most part.
The best thing that could happen, in my opinion, is that – well, no, not the best thing that could happen. But I think the more realistic thing that could happen is that – so we see rug pulled out from Bernie with the superdelegates. And then on the other side, a brokered convention – and the Republicans nominate Bush instead of Trump. And so you get a Clinton-Bush national election with a completely irate voter base that has had their popular pick pulled out from under them. I think that would be a very interesting election. It would be in terms of engendering the rage of the zeitgeist right now. I think that's what we should look for happening, because I don't see how Trump can be stopped on the right, and I don't see the GOP letting that happen. So it's kind of an immovable, unstoppable force meeting an immovable object.
That's a great great analysis, man. And actually, before this whole process began, I actually said, you know, I hope that it's Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush, because then people would actually be like, you know what, this is a fucking monarchy. You know what I mean? This is like, no, I'm tired of this crap. We've already had enough Clintons. We've already had enough Bushes. I mean, what are we now? You know, is this a crown? Are we voting for bloodlines at this point? I know the bloodlines still in many ways run the show around here, with the money and all that stuff, and they control the politics. But are we actually going to go and vote on bloodlines now in our elections? And I think that would just that sheer presence of that kind of election would turn a bunch of people away from the system and have them looking at alternatives and things like that.
Didn't Chelsea Clinton already register so that she can be eligible to be in the next election or something? I heard that somewhere.
Yep, she's the line of succession for sure.
I don't know. I hope not. God.
No, she is right. It was filed for sure. They're grooming her already.
Man, that's unfortunate. But I think that would be an interesting dynamic. And I think it would probably be one of the lowest voter turnouts ever, because I don't think anyone is really excited about Hillary Clinton, and I know nobody's excited about Jeb Bush.
But what are people who aren't voting going to do about all the people that are and are going to force their will on you as the will of the voting minority with the people with guns that very, very quickly want to take all of yours away so you can do nothing about it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know exactly. I mean, the thing is that it sucks now for all the true believers, man, the Bernie Sanders supporters and stuff. You know, they went out and they voted their hearts out in New Hampshire and they kicked ass, right? And they won by 20%, but it didn't really matter. You know, it sucks, but it, you know, that's what happened. Hillary Clinton walked away with the same amount, if not more, delegates. And, you know, we got the Electoral College, we got the delegate process, we got the conventions and all that stuff to deal with. Back in 1968, there was a riot outside of the Democratic Convention that caused some major changes over there with the Democratic Party. So, I mean, you know, I'm not condoning that or saying that's what we should do or anything like that, but there's no telling how people are going to react when the rug gets pulled out from under these two populist candidates. And as much as I disagree with Trump, and as much as I can't stand the guy's dangerous rhetoric, I mean, I have to give it to him for sticking it to the Republican establishment. And causing them a headache and causing them to go and, you know, at first they were trying to push Rubio up, and Rubio got, you know, slipped up in the last debate. Now they gotta find someone new. And look at the money they're wasting. Did you see how much Jeb Bush paid for each vote in New Hampshire?
$1,200.
Jeb Bush paid $1,200 for each vote that he received in New Hampshire.
He spent 30 well times spent. What Kasich did. He spent $35 million in New Hampshire.
He even outspent Hillary.
Yeah, I have people on my timeline saying that they'd like to go and sell their vote on eBay now because of that.
Shit, $1,200. I mean, damn. I mean, yeah. I'd sell my vote for $1,200. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's ridiculous. It really is. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how much we can harp on this political system. It's been so much co-opted that it just makes you sick. And now people are – now that, you know, you got someone like Bernie up there inspiring a good chunk of the populace. He's polling at, like, what, 46% nationwide now. If you think – if you keep in mind that about 30% of the populace is a registered Democrat, he's probably, you know, wielding 12-13% of the country's population. If he gets the shaft like it seems like he's going to, you're going to be looking at 12-13% of the population that is going to be pretty irate.
Well, I mean, look at the delegate count, like the total delegate count already. Clinton already has 394 delegates, and Sanders only has 42. I mean, you can see this shaping up. I don't know how much more blatant it needs to be for people to wake up and realize how much the system just does not care about us.
The only way it would change is if these super delegates somehow got scared people were going to come after them if they botched this election and went against the popular will. And possibly if Anonymous was real, they would release the information of these superdelegates so we could go apply the pliers to them.
That's a great idea. Let's get on that. Come on, Anonymous. Let's get on that.
Because the Electoral College, besides the Federal Reserve, is the biggest possible sham that you could ever imagine.
Yeah, the Electoral College, it's so arcane and it's so hard to get a grasp on. I don't even know anything about the Electoral College. I honestly don't. And I consider myself pretty politically aware of things. I don't know
how these... It was put in to protect senators, typically, is what it was there for. And it's mutated into the presidential election because the elites want to control it all, man. They don't give a shit what you and I think. They really don't. Unless we actually did something.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what's so dangerous about this idea of voting to me. Because, you know, I'm one of the people that I come from the side of the spectrum that doesn't think that voting is the way we solve these problems. And the one thing that really to me is the most dangerous is the illusion of democracy. You know, we sit there and we every 4 years we're like, whatever, these politicians suck, but we get to vote in 4 years from now, we get to vote again, and hopefully next time we make a little bit of an improvement and we elect someone that actually gives a shit, right? But then at the same time, that actually does make kind of good sense if you're dealing with a real democracy and you're dealing with a pure democracy or a democracy that actually reflects the view of the popular vote. But it doesn't. You know, we're dealing with a system that is a little different. We're dealing with an oligarchy. And, you know, funny enough, the superdelegate system was put in place after Jimmy Carter, the one president who didn't start any wars. And what is Jimmy Carter saying lately? What did he just say last week to BBC? The United States is an oligarchy. It's sold out to the highest bidder. That's what Jimmy Carter is saying. The one president that actually didn't start wars, the one president that was there that they created this whole superdelegate process because of, is out there calling it an oligarchy and saying, you know, telling the truth about it, man. And that's right.
The last president to win with the popular vote. I mean, that's really what he was. And isn't it ironic that no major war popped off while a president that got in with the popular vote? I mean, people never want wars. It's always just this fake wag the dog shit.
Yeah. Yep. And he gets the worst rap of any president. and that tells you something, dude. It tells you something. The media is always nailing the guy, and it's all, you know, they're all part. The media is part of the establishment as well. We got another story in the anti-media we're not going to be able to get into today, but it's about Big Pharma and how they're launching a $1 million ad campaign directly at politicians in Washington, D.C. File that under oligarchy. That's coming up tomorrow. We got a story coming up about Tamir Rice. You're not going to want to miss this. Claire's doing a write-up on it. This is unbelievable. It's going to be on the anti-media tomorrow. Thank you all for tuning in. We're here 5 days a week. Monday through Friday. Tomorrow, we're going to have a great show for you tonight. SM Gibson is going to be here in the Anti-Media studio. We're all going to be together. That's going to be sure to be some fireworks tomorrow night. Make sure you tune in. Same place, same time.
Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo.